This English version of the podcast was created using AI-based voice synthesis from the original German recording.
Business Shift.
Business Shift.
The podcast for decision makers and executives who want to deal with the topic of sustainability in a sustainable way. Welcome to Business Shift, the podcast for decision makers and executives who want to align their business strategies with the future. I'm Tobias Kirchhoff, your host from TÜV Rheinland. Today we are talking about a topic that is not only central to the German economy, but also quite complex, the supply chain issue. You could call it the central nervous system of the economy or the umbilical cord to or from the international economy to Germany. Let's hear how our sustainability expert sees it. I would like to welcome Dr. Bahar Shadkraus again today. A warm welcome to you. Nice to have you here.
Hi, Tobias.
Baha, supply chain, central nervous system, or umbilical cord?
I would rather lean towards the umbilical cord.
Why?
Well, because the supply chain supplies materials, raw materials, in order to obtain finished products in the end. Not only products, but also services, and the supply chain is essential for this.
That's what we're going to talk about today. I want to know from you, sustainability in the supply chain, what does that involve? Why is this important? What am I actually legally obliged to do? Why is it that Germany in particular is struggling with its Supply Chain Due Diligence Act? And how do I deal with these issues as an entrepreneur in the future? But maybe let's start at the front. Very basic, the supply chain in 60 seconds. What is it? What do we need it for? And who is part of it?
Yes, the supply chain, as we have just said, is an essential component when it comes to having a finished product, service, or service at the end. This means that everything we really need, I'll say now, from the cradle to the goods, we get from the supply chain. When we talk about a product, it's our raw material suppliers, for example, to get the individual components for production. And in the end, it is the product, then perhaps a raw material again, which may then be recycled. Here, too, you need a certain supply chain to transport the materials, then perhaps recycle them, and then bring them back into the material flows. This means that we always have the raw material suppliers as components of the supply chain. We have manufacturers, we have the logistics companies, but we also have intermediaries, the retailers themselves, and we as consumers are also part of the supply chain.
So strictly speaking, everyone is actually part of it. But actually, one could rather name the exceptions. I think it's faster to perform that. And when you look back on your many years of experience, when did you realize that sustainability is essential in supply chain management?
When did I become aware of this? I think you always become aware of it when you talk about sustainability in companies. I would say it was a gradual process. And the realization actually always came at the time when we were faced with the question, okay, and what do our partners, business partners, our suppliers do? Because sustainability cannot always be implemented 100% in the company alone, because the company itself, the company itself is always only one part of the whole. And then, of course, we have issues such as supply bottlenecks. In Corona, it may have been some parts for automotive production, so that in some cases we didn't get any components at all. Anyone who wanted to have a new car at that time had to expect quite a few long waiting times. And here, too, we see that stable supply chains and also resilience in the supply chain are absolutely essential.
If we now look at sustainability in the supply chain, why sustainability in the supply chain? Because if I say, okay, I take care of sustainability in my company, in my sphere of influence, which I may also have directly under control, that's a bit easier and would perhaps be the first step. But supply chain always means that I have to think outside the box of my company. And that doesn't make it any easier. So why sustainability in the supply chain?
Yes, you actually said it right. The first step is always your own four walls. So first of all, put my own house in order and see what I actually want to improve in my company, in my own processes. But you always quickly come to a point where you realize that yes, i.e. certainly up to 80% are also topics that affect the supply chain. When it comes to raw material production, especially when you talk about energy or energy expenditure, for example, about greenhouse gas emissions, they usually occur either upstream in the supply chain or perhaps downstream. So that means that in order to become better and beyond your own four walls, you have to talk to your partners and your suppliers. And sustainability always means collaboration, working together to improve faster. So the more you share knowledge, take your partners and suppliers with you on your own sustainability journey, the faster you will reach your goal.
This brings us to the next topic. Is there a sustainability goal in the supply chain sector that is very close to your heart?
Yes, of course. So especially when we talk about human rights, it's a very, very emotionally charged topic. And also for me, well, I myself have children. And if I imagine that I am wearing a garment that may have had children's hands on it in the dyeing plant or in the production facilities, then I don't want that. That is my declared goal, and that, I think, is a topic that really drives me the most, namely issues such as forced labor, exploitation of people who may not have the privilege of becoming so big here in Europe, America, or that we don't exploit them and that we actually do business fairly. And that is simply only possible with a more sustainable supply chain. And that also means perhaps accepting efforts at one point or another, accepting investments, but then actually improving in the long term.
That is the goal now. And where do you see the biggest challenge in the field of sustainable supply chain?
I think that the biggest challenge is always the relationship with suppliers. So you often always have someone who sells something and someone who wants something. This means that price always plays a very, very important role. And I think the biggest goal should be to really have a good and fair supplier relationship at eye level, yes, to put together the challenges, because I think the biggest pain is really to create transparency, especially in very complex and very global supply chains. Just because, for example, you have your net zero CO2 target and can only do so if you have the appropriate data transparency. In summary, I would say that it is totally important to come to a common level and address the relevant issues and sometimes perhaps not so nice aspects in order to find common solutions. That sounds a bit, yes, would be nice and so, but that's actually the experience I've had. The more you get into conversation, the more you talk to each other and also discuss the topics openly, the easier it becomes for both sides, because there are concerns on both sides. As an entrepreneur, you're always worried that at some point you may no longer exist or that you will be uneconomical. On the other hand, as a supplier or partner, you always have the worry that you will be replaced for some reason. And if you manage to tackle a common goal, then I think you have better chances. And if we come back to the topic of challenges, then of course, now the CRISP topics, we really have to implement ecological and social standards at all levels. This is a process and also a difficult process and also a very, very big challenge, not only for the direct suppliers. So if we really go into the indirect supply chain, it gets dark and difficult relatively quickly.
Yes, and it can really mean effort. So if, for example, I find out that a supplier may be violating some issues where I say, I want to do that, but then it can mean that I have to part with him and have to get another supplier, which I, if he is also abroad, maybe even far abroad, where I might have real expenses. And that would probably be a big challenge.
Yes, absolutely, of course. I mean, you have to be aware that not everyone may have the content of the standards and perhaps not the knowledge either. That's why I say that this takeaway is also so important, as is the development of knowledge also with suppliers in the supply chain in order to point out precisely such grievances, which may then prevail, and to say my goal is to resolve these grievances and I have developed measures that I would like to implement with you. This also helps you because then you also have the opportunity to continue to be part of the supply chain and perhaps also to solve the grievances that then arise for you together. This is also in the interest of the business partner to go along with it.
Yes, and it can also mean that companies are much more involved in communication and also in the conflict with each other than has perhaps been the case so far. While perhaps today this is simply about numbers, data, facts, cheapest offer, etc. runs, they would then deal with each other more intensively.
Yes, absolutely. And also especially the communication of the individual goals that you may be pursuing. If I am now a manufacturer and have raw materials, which I obtain from abroad, perhaps from Asia, Africa, then I have certain goals that I pursue. And I ask certain things for a certain reason, namely because I may have measures and want to achieve my goals. But if I communicate openly and also share my strategy with my suppliers and say that you are also part of my strategy, it doesn't always work. We don't make the world rosy, but it's a total must.
We have a podcast from TÜV Rheinland here, and we also stand a bit for regulation. And when I think of the supply chain, we are also very quickly at the German regulation, namely the Supply Chain Due Diligence Act. Some hate it, others hype it. How do you see that? Which parts of the German Supply Chain Act are you perhaps most proud of? Where you say, well, there is still a bit of development to be done. So how would you rate the German Supply Chain Due Diligence Act?
Maybe I'll start with that. You said some hate it. I can also understand that some hate this law because it, of course, means an enormous effort to look at the supply chain one's own and set up a decent supplier management system there. This involves work. On the other hand, however, the Supply Chain Due Diligence Act is so important to protect exactly the issues I have just addressed, namely our human rights. And not only here, but all over the world. And we are used to consuming products. We are in a very, very fast-paced society where we may not always be aware of these things. From the consumer's point of view and from the manufacturer's point of view, as the managing director of a company, I could not be responsible for the fact that there was even the chance of a child's hand on a product that I sell. I just couldn't reconcile that with my conscience. In this respect, the whole issue really protects against child labor, fair wages, but also environmental protection. These are important aspects that we have to push even more, especially if we globalize more and more, and it simply has to be fair for all people in the end. So what I think is particularly good about the law is that you really have to approach the topic in a structured way. I'm a big fan of structure. I say it again and again, but it's also necessary. So especially when it comes to saying, okay, where do I actually have my main risks in the supply chain? Then you have to take a look at the high-risk countries in which I might produce. And you have to set up a solid risk analysis that you repeat over and over again. You have to establish it once, but I think once it's up and running, it's an extremely valuable tool, and which you can certainly use for other areas as well. And I think that's pretty good, because the whole topic of complaint procedures, i.e. that really everyone in the company, but also external ones, have the opportunity to report violations. This simply brings in much more transparency, and these violations are usually or always can be reported anonymously, which of course also brings a certain security. For those who may not dare to point out grievances, I also find that particularly important. And I think the most positive effect is simply really that the law gives people in the supply chain who do not have the privilege of benefiting from occupational health and safety laws and standards a voice, and that hidden problems or grievances can be uncovered.
That sounds very, very nice. Does this also happen in reality? Are you aware of a case where it was perhaps uncovered abroad? Yes, it just doesn't work properly and changes have been brought about?
There certainly are, yes. So, of course, when we talk about forced labor, about child labor, then these are very, very serious violations. But we also talk about the fact that trade unions can be formed, that employees have a way to contact an organization in the company without fear of losing their jobs. These are things that will certainly be reported again rather than really a violation of child labor. So I am not aware of this in my circle now, but it will certainly work.
Let's get back to Germany. Why are German companies in particular having such a hard time with the Supply Chain Due Diligence Act? There are polls that claim that the law is a complete failure because of missing the targets. Companies would not deal with it at all. Because the law was actually supposed to lead to the fact that only suppliers attach great importance to environmental protection or social standards. But it doesn't work that way yet. Why not?
Yes, I think we are having such a hard time because we are the first to really have to implement such a law now. And it comes to the fact that we have very, very complex and globally branched supply chains that simply do not always make comprehensive monitoring possible. That has to be said. It's not always possible to bring in light everywhere and see what's actually going on with my suppliers, especially when it comes to indirect suppliers. This means that German companies have a very, very great responsibility here and have gained an increase in responsibility over these difficult, complex supply chains, which are simply challenging. So you just have to say that. Then, as I have just mentioned, we are talking about risk analysis. We are talking about new structures in the company. We are also talking about new responsibilities. A human rights officer, for example, who is supposed to monitor something like this closely. These are all costs. They are expenses in resources, in audits, in the implementation of such tools. That hurts at first. That's why I can understand it well that there are also companies in Germany that say, what's the point of all this? Then we have the whole issue of lack of transparency. Especially when I request data, as I have just said, the willingness to share data is not always there. This is also a challenge and it has to be learned first. And then, of course, the lack of experience. With such a law, you are also setting up new processes. They have to establish themselves. They have to be integrated into perhaps existing processes. And a law always resonates with the concern of sanctions. Here, too, you have to look at how surveillance is actually carried out here, even then at the German level. What should we expect? And I think these are all fears that resonate with companies, so they are completely understandable. However, it can already be said that companies have already anchored sustainability in their strategy and pay much more attention to non-financial key figures in their suppliers. And of course, they will certainly get through more easily through such a change to new requirements.
So less a pipe cracker than a starter.
Yes, yes. So a bit of a push. So I always say it's actually stupid when you somehow have to say with a raised index finger, so now you have to. But sometimes there is also a certain push.
I understood that, but ultimately it just means more bureaucracy, which means you have to fill out more forms, you have to report more and so on. And how does it fit together that we say in Germany, hey, we have to reduce bureaucracy, and now with the Supply Chain Due Diligence Act, we have more to do again? So can anything be reduced in bureaucracy at all, or do we have to say, well, it's going to be a bit more on top now?
Yes, I think in the beginning, there is always a shovel more, as I have just said. You have to adapt. You have to see, where do I stand? You have to set up new processes and structures. But ultimately, when we talk about reducing bureaucracy and documentation and reporting obligations, there are also various tools that can be used. So I always say sustainability and digitization go hand in hand. This means that if I know what I have to query, then I can really make use of these digital tools, which can also be used with the help of artificial intelligence, etc. Of course, it also makes it easier to collect standardized data in the supply chain. In my opinion, there must be clearer guidelines, because otherwise we will have no comparability. Now, I'm jumping a bit into the topic, but when we talk about standardized risk analyses, when we talk about information that needs to be reported, frameworks help. They suggest more bureaucracy at the beginning, but then we move more and more in the direction of standardization, standardized queries, so that we automatically get into a process that will certainly survive this bureaucratic jumble at some point. So when we talk about risk analyses, we can certainly do it tool-based at some point. But when we talk about reporting, sustainability reporting obligations, there are also digital solutions that can be used here.
Do you think that the consumer, who is already aware of this, has a certain power to persuade producers to pay more attention to this?
Yes, for sure. So I think raising awareness in society plays a very, very important role, because we are all increasingly reflecting the whole issue of ethical responsibility in our purchasing behavior. I'll put the question on the back burner. Do you pay attention to that?
Yes, definitely.
And yes, we always take a very close look at what we buy on the basis of labels and, of course, certifications. Of course, we don't know what's really behind the labels and certifications, especially for consumers. And I always try to make sure that the products have the TÜV Rheinland seal on them, because I know that we only work to the highest standards and certify according to international standards, and that we can assume that when it comes to the supply chain, for example, that our colleagues around the world already keep an eye on everything that is done properly.
Yes, and that's exactly what it is, especially when it comes to the topic of one's own ethical responsibility. I've just said it, I don't want to buy a product where children's hands were on it, I just don't want to. And as you say, I can't always judge that. That's why, in my opinion, the responsibility is simply placed correctly with the manufacturing companies that sell these products. Because they also have a certain, I'll say now, reach that we can't grasp at all. You say it, labels, standards, of course they exist. But as a consumer, I often can't understand what is actually behind it. And from a company's point of view, it simply has to be a goal to really respect the environment and also the people we work with whom we live.
What do you think the ideal supply chain of the future looks like?
Yes, in my opinion, the ideal supply chain is definitely crisis-proof. And this can only be crisis-proof if we have full transparency, i.e., if we can trace exactly where what comes from. We were just talking about digital technologies, for example, through blockchain. This means making data available in the supply chain and making it usable. Then, of course, we have the whole issue of fair working conditions. We have already talked about it. If people are really no longer exploited, and we can say that we have an ethical responsibility that we also implement and that we can achieve together with our suppliers through fair partnerships, for example, with a focus perhaps on possible regional partnerships, it is not always possible to support local suppliers in short term. To have transport routes and simply to make supply chains a little less complex?
You just mentioned blockchain, and you just said that new technologies such as AI also help with documentation, for example. I find that very, very exciting. I think this is also called the twin transition, where they say we combine sustainability with digitalization. Do you have an example of innovative approaches to sustainable supply chain management?
Well, I actually have an example from food production. I don't know if that's interesting. So AI was used to really use the materials in production or to produce as much as is actually consumed. That means consumption data comes in. I have just said before, we consumers, as part of the supply chain, how much meat do we consume per year, for example, so that production processes can really be adapted to these conditions with pinpoint accuracy. That means in the production process, when a certain quantity is reached, then to say, okay, it's going to stop at this point because otherwise 60% of our products would be thrown away.
So you can also actively avoid overproduction. I can see that too. For example, we talked about it the other day in 3D printing, that I then only produce what I actually need, and then I no longer have any storage problems. But then really combine innovation also with this sustainability topic.
Exactly. And that's what it is. There we are again on the subject of costs. The less I have to store, the less costs I have, the easier it will actually be to improve here. But of course, that contradicts our mass production, which we, of course, know and have also learned in recent years, Aegi profitability, we have been able to produce more than we might need so that sales remain high and sales remain good.
Dear Bahar, what would you recommend to a company that wants to make its supply chain more sustainable now? What do you think are the first steps?
So the analysis of the current situation, the status quo analysis, always comes first. I think I've said it again and again in some episodes so far. You really have to paint a picture. So you have to look at what the picture should look like and how much of the picture I might already have in it. When we talk about the whole topic of risk, then of course I also have to identify my risks. This means having an overview of the entire supply chain. and also create them in order to identify these ecological and social risks that we have been talking about. That means setting priorities from time to time. Proper healthy supplier management does not always mean having a direct overview of 100%, but maybe also to say, these are my top 5 products. These are my top 50 suppliers. And I start with them, I screen them, I take them with me, I really try to implement these measures. Of course, this has to be reflected by law, of course, by legal requirement across the entire supply chain, but I have to start somewhere. Then, of course, to see, okay, are there perhaps sustainability standards that I can also implement at my suppliers? Is it perhaps certain social standards? Are they environmental standards that I may also include in my contracts, which I stipulate, where I say, okay, they have to be implemented so that we can enter into this partnership? And if these can't be implemented, for example, if it's a top supplier, then sit down with them and say, okay, but how can I support you? What do you need for this? And then, of course, yes, surveillance, even if it's not always nice. It is always important to have an overview and to keep it. That means repeating all these risk analyses that I do annually and looking again and again, okay, do I perhaps also have a need for training internally with partners? How can I train them? How can I take them with me on my journey in order to then ultimately incorporate everything into a, I'll say, reporting, so that you simply have full transparency for yourself?
Dear Bahar, thank you for this deep insight into the supply chain. Mind learning, whether consumer, large or small company, we are all somehow dependent on the supply chain. And we must all have an increased interest in making it work and making it more sustainable. And it is just as important that companies get the support they need to meet their obligations in the first place. Dear listeners, thank you very much for being there. I assume that you can also take something with you for your everyday business life. And if you want to learn more about sustainability in business, just stay tuned. Subscribe to our podcast and we will bring you the most interesting tips and stories on the topic of sustainability in business, innovation and transformation in a resource-efficient way directly into your ear canal. You can receive us wherever podcasts are available and wherever you are. In the home office, in the car, in the bathroom, while ironing, walking the dog, in nature, with a child, cone or dog. And as always, you can find all the information under our show notes. And don't forget, change, even in business, always starts with ourselves. So until next time, your
Business Shift.
Business Shift.
The podcast for decision makers and executives who want to deal with the topic of sustainability in a sustainable way. Stay curious.
Bye-bye.